Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about race in the media tonight, how issues are covered and how they impact you. My guests are Hamil Harris, reporter for The Washington Informer, Erica Totten, co-founder of Black Lives Matter DC, and David Johns, executive director of the White House Initiative on Education Excellence for African Americans. Lines are open. Want to hear from you at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Erica, I want to go back to you and something you said earlier about the, and this is certainly a paraphrase where you're talking about the images concerning, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, the death of not only young black men, but black people at the hands of authority figures such as police and the like. And the constant seeing and hearing about these violent issues. How do you balance the need for this information to get out for whatever reason it needs to get out with the psychological pain that it inflicts?
Yeah. What I do in supporting people and managing that is teaching people to check their emotional, mental, spiritual, and physical capacity before they consume those images. So what does self-care look like for you? And not just, you know, going to get your nails done or going to see a movie or things like that, but what is it that you are doing to process what it is that you are experiencing? Do you know how to breathe fully? Do you know how to do deep cleansing breaths and meditation and being able to just be able to sit with your body and be able to process those things? So it really is, we have to recognize that when we are consuming these images, it lands in our body somewhere, that this energy that we are absorbing is landing, this trauma is compacting and landing in our knees and in our back, and we're wondering why we are sick. And a lot of it is with the images that we are consuming, because we're not being mindful of our capacity. We think that it is our obligation to consume all of these images of black pain and death. And it is okay for us to say that we have seen enough, still move and be able to bear witness when we have the capacity. But we need to be able to still act. And if we are paralyzed by fear and pain, we aren't going to be able to do the organizing work that's going to be necessary as we move forward.
Well, that's the point. I understand the holistic attempt to address that. But I was talking about specifically, you know, what impact does the desire to give pushback to these images have on the community's ability to act?
Harold, you said something critical. I heard the word organization, impact on community. 30 years ago, we had NAACP, Urban League, NEA, SCLC, massive organizations with thousands of people on the membership rolls. So they had the Big Eight. They had Dorothy Height. And so one of those people could affect a lot of folks. I hear what you said, Erica, which is powerful. But how about impact? How many people will hear what you just said that really needs to hear this without the organizational sophistication of our predecessors?
Well, this is all of those organizations still exist, right? There are leaders, including a lot of young leaders, who are not only connected to the Black Lives Matter movement, but working independent of that. But I think a part of I think what ties to what Erica is saying is that we have the power of social media to be able to amplify voices, right? So this might be a place where this is productive. I work with a lot of young people who leverage social media in particular to do two things. One, to Erica's point, is to create spaces where they can feel whole, where they can feel happy, where they can otherwise thrive, right? I have a group of young mentees who trade videos each morning that are positive in nature. They trade clips sometimes of the Reed, Kit Fury, and Chris were talking about Black excellence or otherwise celebrating things that might not show up on CNN when they are, again, looping Black pain or otherwise trying to profit from it, right? The second thing is that I also draw strength from social media and its ability to highlight the need for us to have more of these conversations and to do this tough work, right? So last year, toward the end of the year, Kid Cudi, right, a rap artist, used Facebook to write a letter about trauma and mental health and him struggling with suicide and depression. That allowed young men to leverage then Twitter to talk about and create a campaign where it was easier for us to check in with each other and ask about our mental health, right? This is important because at a time where we sometimes pause during national moments of tragedy to mourn the loss of black lives, right? Black boys between the ages of 11 and 17 are committing suicide at twice the rates they had 20 years before now, right? So there are a lot of things that are going on in our community. We know the implications of living with prolonged exposure to poverty, our toxic stress and trauma. There aren't even studies out now about what it means for us to be consuming the kind of media that Erica is talking about and that your question is aiming at. But we have to think about how it is that we can leverage not only media, but technology to create spaces that are healing and that otherwise, again, allow us to be happy, healthy, and whole.
I get it. I'm not talking about healing. I'm talking about the news. And that's what I'm talking about, because on one hand, and I've even said myself in watching mainstream media, not recently, but years ago, where there were critical issues impacting the Black community, and when you looked for these things on mainstream media, and I'm talking about the big ones. I'm talking about NBC and CBS and CNN and ABC. And you say, I know about that story. Why aren't they covering it?
But Harold,
wait a minute. And then when they cover it, and now we're saying
we dehumanized.
Well, not always. Not always. But my point is that if that information, you know, are we damned if we do, damned if we don't? They don't cover it. They don't care about us. If they do, cover it, then we're critical of it.
But Harold, look what you just did. Oh, I'm not talking about news.
I'm talking about healing. No, I'm talking about the news.
But guess what? But you give authority to the quote mainstream. In other words, you're not in the main. You're the minor. So I'm the main. I'm the authority.
I'm not talking about the audience of Black folks. I'm talking about the mass
audience of Black folks. Folks look at the mainstream news and feel like a piece of crap, feel irrelevant, you know. And again, we're being bamboozled mentally. I like what happened before we came in here. He said, I saw what you tweeted about the Martin Luther King parade. Mm-hmm. Now I'm over there tweeting because I'm not at the post anymore. So I'm creating my own little news operation. Uh-huh. So the point is that, but here's a guy from the White House that read a tweet or read something and I felt better. That healed me because again, my subliminal self, we're over here in Southeast, nobody gives a damn. So my point is that maybe we need to look at these shared spaces, because we sure share the evening news with some.
Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not saying that what he's saying is not important.
I think all of us are having we sing it from the same choir book, but I just want to go back to, I think early on, Sister Erica answered your question.
Yeah.
And where you left it, which is asking us, what do we do about the fact that we are often looking to mainstream media to sometimes validate or otherwise inform larger conversations, right?
Exactly.
What Sister Erica said was, one, we don't have to look to them. Yes. They're independent sources. We are also creating our own media. But at the point at which they are covering our stories, if they're not doing it right, we know how to hold them accountable. If they're telling the truth, but telling it slant, we can force them to tell the whole truth, right? Or we can also, which is what she also said, too, is just check out. Right. Give ourselves a limited time to consume it and otherwise say I'm not going to do it.
Right. And I agree that there should be a space.
I think that's what you were doing, sister.
Right. Thank you. Okay. Right. Thank you.
And like I said, I get it. I'm not talking about checking out. I'm talking about information.
I'm just saying, sometimes you have to check out. Sometimes you have to hear.
Right,
but sometimes you have to consume.
People are checking out. They're checking out.
That is not true. Let's not say stuff like that. I don't want you,
I don't agree with that.
No, I don't want you to do it. It's not true.
Checking out either.
I'm going to ask you the question.
When you say,
no, listen.
That's a question, though. Don't make the statement. No, you were going to make the point that young people are checking out. As long as what you say is not going to disparage young people.
No, I'm not disparaging. I got four kids, okay? Number one.
Don't say young people.
When I say young people,
let them finish.
Let me say my point. When you said that young people have different spaces, that's a wonderful thing. I'm not saying that it's not either or, it's both and. So therefore, if I have a space of mutual support and understanding, or I have a podcast or whatever, that's a great thing. So I'm not saying that they're leaving the news thing, because we're going to get mainstream news. But I'm saying is there's some alternatives that are good. Even if you have alternatives, I'm not saying, don't put me up and say, well, you know.
Well, what did you mean when you said they were checking
out? Let's move past that.
No, I don't want to move past it. You jumped out there with it.
Said it, brother.
Can I just speak?
No, hold on. Just a minute. I want you to clarify what
I'm trying to clarify.
Please go ahead.
When I check out, that means that I'm looking for beyond the big four news organizations to find out what's happening. Again, the Talladega story, for example, you had them say, well, this is the issue. They don't want to come to the Trump. They shouldn't come. So therefore, I went to Talladega and read some of the local press to figure out, you know, what's going on there. A different voice. I'm not saying to check out. If you check out a book in the library, it's still
the
library.
I take issue with the assertion that young people are checking out of mainstream media, of engagement of anything. And I think far too
you
often.
You just said that. Engagement of anything.
I am making clear.
I think we have a semantical issue here.
And no, it's not. Here's my, listen, words matter. I majored in English, so I'm clear about that. There is power in precision. I took issue with the fact that you started your statement by saying young people are checking out. And okay. I am bothered when adults make statements about young people that are, one, generalized, and not, two, not based in facts.
So, wait a minute. Hold on.
That's how you lose people.
But let me hold on. I'm confused. I think you two are talking about two different things, because when you mentioned checking out, you were talking about a holistic approach to dealing with these images of violence. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's not. That's not what you were talking about.
It's not, and again, he didn't even get to finish it because in part I didn't allow him to.
Okay, but hold on.
To the extent that somebody might assert that young people are checking out of anything is problematic.
Right, but what I'm saying is I don't think you're talking about checking out. You're not talking about zoning out.
I'm just saying, let's be mindful of the words that we use.
I understand that, which is why I'm trying to have this conversation. I don't think there's a misunderstanding here because for me, I would disagree if somebody says young people are checking out. And by definition, I mean, in other words, they're backing off and saying, I'm not dealing with this anymore.
And they did check out with the Hillary. Some people did not vote for Hillary Clinton, not because they weren't concerned about our democracy, but they felt that they didn't represent them.
So here we are.
So you're telling me
the data does not support the assertion that young people checked out, that they didn't vote, or that they empathetic. But all too often, adults make these statements. Young people are leading. They
are leading.
Adults. A lot of elders didn't show up to vote. A lot of them said, "I'm gonna stay out of this." A lot of grown men showed up and voted for Donald Trump. Let's not blame this on the babies.
I'm not going. No,
but let's talk about the quote unquote babies before I go to the phones, because the point that I was agreeing about, I agree with David about, is after the election, the quote unquote babies, those that were not old enough to vote, they were in the street. They were protesting.
They did it before, too.
They had not checked out. They were engaged.
Right.
They were
fully engaged. But we're talking about the mainstream media. Let's be clear. Let me just amp this up a little bit.
There are young people who are in that space. Not if you're going to disparage young people.
I'm not disparaging young people.
To say they have checked out is disparaging.
I'm not disparaging anybody. I'm not disparaging anybody.
Hold on.
Checked out is disparaging.
Hold on.
I'm not disparaging anybody.
Hold on. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Lewis, calling from Woodbridge. Thanks, Lewis. What's on your mind? Lewis, are you there?
Yes.
Go right ahead.
I'm here. Well, I've been listening at the conversation. I think it's kind of going in all kind of directions, but my understanding was it was about the mainstream media, one of the key points about the mainstream media. And the thing that I wanted to say is that the biggest problem with this universe is the division that the mainstream media actually perpetrate on this universe.
What do you mean by that? Quickly, Lewis, I got some other folks on the line.
It is the most divisive element in race relations than even racist. Because one of the things that they do, they misrepresent, number one, that's one element of this society that they misrepresent, and that's the black, black element. Because what they do, they portray blacks as if they are some kind of monolithic entity when they are not. You know, you have as many professional blacks, middle class, upper class, and lower class. But what they all do, they put us all in a ghetto class. And until that stops happening, you are not, and they have the biggest platform. When you have a platform that large, then you have power. It doesn't have to mean that you have to be truthful about what you're doing. It's that you have this ability to spread your venom so far that basically you drown out the truth. And
okay.
That's the biggest problem.
Well, Lewis, thank you so much. Thank you so much for your point. I'm going to let Erica speak up, since she's been polite during these past several minutes. Your thoughts about what Lewis just said, Erica?
I think that there is what he talked about at the beginning of having a platform to be able to spread venom. And that's, again, what I see David in really pushing back of. We cannot give platform to anything that's going to disparage who we are and the truth and just going to the facts. And it's the same thing that we're looking at with mainstream media. We need people to tell the truth. That's what we need from mainstream. We need it from everyone, not with the slant, but to lay the truth out there and not be neutral in those. So if you have a candidate or a president-elect that is spewing venom, you mm-hmm. have to be able to say that this is violence and this is how it's going to impact. But if you are just presenting this information as just is and giving this a platform, this is what you're putting out there. And you are responsible for that.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment, continuing our discussion about race in the media. John from Baltimore, you're next. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about race and the media. Let me go back to the phone lines. John, calling from Baltimore. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, we've got to understand that there is an esoteric agenda. There's powers, there's a power that be, and they have a plan. And what they're doing with the media is they are affecting the black man generationally, and that's what we don't understand. And they're hitting the younger generation. You see how the images that they're putting up in the media, the younger generation, and not just the younger generation, but some of the older generation, is capturing that image. Those are vibrations that's coming into the atmosphere. It's coming into our minds. And what happens is when you focus on a thing, you connect with that thing. So if what you're seeing is a bunch of negativity and that's showing you the image that you are, that's not really what you are, but that's the image that they're trying to portray. If you focus on that and you connect with that, you become that thing that they're trying to feed you. So what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to begin to educate ourselves, and we have to understand that you can change your generational code. The ways that the society and the things that the multimedia has put out there, we can change the image of ourselves. That's not the image that we are supposed to be. We need to change our wisdom source and focus on the right thing so that we don't get caught up in this in the agenda of what the mainstream media is trying to portray.
Okay.
That's going to be the key.
Well, John, thank you so much. Go ahead.
What I want to say is what's not on trial are young African-Americans, young people who want to be engaged in this process, who are engaged and who have a voice and have to be reckoned with. The question is, so there is still, I will take this to my grave, there is still a block between some people, young people, my children, myself, you know, who will see something on the evening news that they can't relate to and they refuse to digest, and therefore they're looking for alternative sources. And so if I zone out or check out or whatever out of that news, we're talking about racism in the media. When you send a 35-year-old somebody that doesn't look like me in my community, and you're going to think all of us are hooligans or crazy and wild-eyed, whatever, I have a problem with that. So therefore, if I have a problem with you, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to tell you the real story, why were the pollsters so wrong? Why were they? Because they didn't have the relationships in the community. And maybe tell me, explain that to me, you know, David, what? There's a problem here.
I don't understand your point you're trying to make.
The point I'm making is that there are people, I do believe, in our community that may be younger than me or whatever, who did not buy into this media narrative that's given to us from the major newspapers, major CNNs, and therefore they, to me, did not buy the story, didn't engage, and therefore they felt disillusioned.
Okay.
What story are you talking about?
I don't know.
I'm talking about the political story. I don't know what you don't know about it.
Racism?
No, I'm talking about,
general.
Okay, we just had a presidential election. So the question is, and talking to some young people in my class, maybe it's at Morgan State, I don't know. But I talked to a lot of them, they didn't feel Hillary, they like Bernie or whatever. They did not vote. They didn't vote because they didn't see someone who looked like them.
A lot of adults didn't do that either.
Okay, but
yeah,
the point
I would,
is that,
I would agree
but
that
doesn't,
that
you can't minimize the fact. What I'm saying is that there are some people who didn't buy it. There was an arrogance with the media.
I agree, but I'm also saying you can't maximize it and attribute it to young people.
I'm trying to maximize.
Well, let me.
You're making a blanket statement. I'm just talking about some people who didn't get it.
I'm not sure that we can really answer that question. I want to move on to issues of responsibility, whether it is the black press or black reporters, black pundits in the mainstream media. And during the break, you made a comment, David, about Angela Rye and others. I want you to expand on that.
The point I was making during the break is that there's power in precision, and I think it's challenging sometimes when people make general statements about groups of people, in particular young people. And I named a number of young people, including Angela Rye and Simone Sanders and Mark Lamont Hill, who put themselves in uncomfortable spaces to speak full truth to power, including the face of racist, ignorant, paid pundits sometimes. I offer them simply as an example to say that the idea that people are checking out of spaces doesn't make sense to me.
How do we reach the, you know, the other groups of black people? And I say groups of black people, no matter what their hyper-specific demographic happens to be, young black people, young black women, young black men, you know, young adults, Erica, if they are not paying attention to what would be perceived as mainstream media?
One of the things that we have been doing, particularly with Black Lives Matter DC, is focusing on political education. So having people teaching, what does white supremacy look like, and how does it impact you? What's the roadmap to this policy, to what you're experiencing now? So to be able to lay it out for them of, one, you are not inherently worthless or inadequate, but there are systems and policies that have actually been put in place that have you where you are. There are certain ideologies or self-limiting beliefs that also support that. But so we can heal that piece, but also what are some of the things systematically that have us in the situations that we are in, so we know that it's not inherently us. So it really is going to our community and talking with young people, with elders, with whoever, people that are our age that are asking those questions, and then being able to lay it out and have the language be accessible, not speaking over someone's head, but have it be accessible of what are the things that are impacting our communities and what's the root of them. And it's not just us.
I have a question, and this is for everyone, but I want to start with David. A story that is very black, but it is in the mainstream. And that is the story of the woman who is now behind bars accused of stealing
education.
Yeah, the child, a child, 2 days old or what have you, a black child, a black woman accused of stealing a black child from a black family. How do you grade the importance of that story? And do you think that is an important story to tell?
I don't know how you grade it, but yes, it is an important story to tell. One, because it happens. It happens far too often. And we as a community need to have conversations about difficult things like that in order, if nothing else, to learn how to better respond.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's, you know, because again, this is the only white people in this story, the only white person really, when you're talking about characters, is the sheriff. Everybody else in this story is black. The young woman, the woman who's accused of stealing her shortly after her birth, her mother, her father, the family in South Carolina. Okay. And my question is the reason I ask, why is the story important and what impact? Because is it a happy ending? I don't know.
No one knows because it's hard
to grade that story.
But it's still
story.
Being able to humanize a story. Mm-hmm. So it's not being able to put race into it as also being able to say that we are inherently, you know, violent or whatever it may be.
Which I don't believe was said.
Right. I'm not saying that it was, but it's also in how we talk about stories that are impacting black people or someone being murdered or things like that. It is looking at how other stories are told about other human beings. And then how do you do that here?
One of the
well?
Big problems with the main big newspapers.
Tell me about the story. I want to stick to this story.
But in this particular story, you remember the reporter on CNN or someone said, I listened to it. They said, well, she seemed to have she was a pretty good mom. She was a nurse and maybe whatever happened back then, but she did a pretty good job raising her. And now this little girl is going to have to wake up without the only mother she's ever known. So it's almost like, it almost saying, well, it's okay to take someone else's child and to raise that child because you were a good mother. It's almost, to me, what I felt, it's like they minimize that the mother that lost her child. Well, somebody else raised your child. Again, but we don't know.
Well, and see, and it's only and a 2-minute soundbite. And I think that's one of the discussions when you really kind of dissect this story, because this woman is accused of a horrible crime. She's accused of stealing someone's child, no matter what color she happens to be. But yes, this, again, like I said, this is a black story.
I'm looking for the specific story. When you started, it wasn't where I thought we were going. But the thing that's coming to mind, and I'm looking at my Google feed now, is that this is something that is happening, or at least is being told about in a national way every other month. right? In 2011, I worked on Capitol Hill, the Senate Help Committee, and reauthorized a bill that was about assisting children who were victims of crimes like this, right? There's international trafficking. A lot of that has to do with women and young girls. Some of that also includes babies. I think to Sister Erica's point, the story needs to be told because it's a human story, right? And we need to be mindful of these things so that we as a community can be more watchful so that we can help understand if there's trauma that impacted this woman. I think to the some of the themes that have come up in our conversation while we've been here, we have to be careful to not misattribute or overattribute things that are specific to the story to black people, or to have that be generalized in ways that, that quote, mainstream media might be. But if I could go back to the question that Erica was able to respond to that you asked about where do we go to people, if I asked young people now what their primary sources of news were, most of them would probably say three. One, Instagram, right? Two, the radio, right? And then three, Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. And I put Twitter at the bottom because I think those of us who are a little bit older tend to spend more time there based on.
And when you say young people, what do you mean?
I'm talking about youth ages 12 through 27.
Okay,
generally,
cool.
Right?
I've got 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, we're overrepresented. The point here is that you got to go where they are, right? You got to meet people where they are, and you have to find ways to give them information, right? So the same story that one can present on air on CNN can be digested and given to students on Instagram as well as on Twitter and on radio. We just have to be thoughtful about meeting folks where they are.
Excellent point. I want to thank all of you for coming in and certainly sharing with us. This is a conversation I think we need to have, you know, more often. And obviously, you know, all black media isn't monolithic either. So, you know, certainly lots of things to think about. So, again, Hamil Harris with The Washington Informer, Erica Totten, co-founder of Black Lives Matter, and David Johns, executive director of the White House Initiative on Education Excellence for African Americans until Thursday.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I get the rest.
He did a great job.
Well, you did an excellent job, Eric, and I'm sure there are going to be great things ahead for you as well. So, again, thank you so very much.
Thank you for having us.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, January 16th, 2017. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR or Twitter at HFisher WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voice.